You are now tuned in from the Desk of Low, brought to you by from the That Feeling Podcast Network. If you have a dream, go get it.
Welcome back from the Desk of Low. I have with me a production duo on the rise. You might have heard of some of their production, like Lammy, or you know, some of their work with Trevor Lane. Together, I have Grant and Geller. Together, they form Widowmaker. How are you, gents?
Hey, doing good. How you doing?
Oh, you know, it's brick-ass cold up here in Canada.
Oh, right on. It's pretty moderate here.
So I'm just curious, gents. Let's start off by introducing you gents separately. Let's start off with Gutter. Where are you from, sir, and how did you get into producing?
I'm from Gresham, Oregon, one city east of Portland. And I just ran with a crew that was into turntablism back in the day, and we just kind of naturally fell into samplers, and once we discovered samplers, it was over from there.
Because, like, I know you guys were ex-beat makers.
Yeah. I mean, we still are beat makers. We just kind of claimed that on the Instagram page. We just kind of put ex-beat makers turn producers simply because we're capable of full production from start to finish of any project.
Yeah, it pretty quickly got a lot bigger than just making beats.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And let's get to you, Grant. Where are you from, and when did you get into producing?
I'm from Gresham, Oregon as well, and I was a jazz musician, like, ever since I was a kid, and, you know, when I was about 13, 14 years old, I started sampling jazz records, and I just fell in love with it. So, you know, I've been doing it for 20 years now.
So you gents are obviously a lot older than I am.
Yes, I'm Gutta, I'm 41.
I'm 34. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm 27 here. So you guys obviously got to experience the 90s hip-hop and how music wasn't so accessible as it was nowadays, too. I'm just curious, too. Would you say that the two of you met during the 90s, or have you guys been lifelong friends?
I think we met in 2003. So, yeah, I think it was 2003.
Yeah, right around then.
And we didn't start making music until, you know,
2014.
Yeah, maybe 13, 14, yeah.
Together. We've always made music on our own. We both were working with SP-303s back in the day, and we actually tried to link up back in the day. We were already friends, and we tried to link up to work on music, and it just didn't work out. And then we ended up living really close to one another.
Yeah.
And on the random, both of our girlfriends, my wife and Grant's girlfriend, just happened to be best friends also on their own. It didn't even have anything to do with Grant and I, really. So it's just, you know, Grant and I started kicking it a lot more often, and then we started working on beats. And that's how the Asahi sessions came to be.
Yeah.
You know, that was like our first collaborative effort. If you listen to it, it seems a lot more broken down and just basic than the rest of our work. It's because we were trying to figure out what it was like to work as a duo during that project.
Yeah, and it was, you know, we both knew of each other. I mean, we were friends, and we knew that the other made music. And I think one day I had put something together that I liked, and I was hanging out with Gutta, and I was like, hey, check this out. And then we just started kind of meeting up regularly and putting stuff together. And it didn't take long for us to start putting, like, full EPs and LPs together.
Because I keep it 100 on this show. I actually thought that you gents were a rapper named Widowmaker. I'm just curious, and then I did my research on you. I'm like, oh, these guys are a production duo. I'm curious, why the name Widowmaker?
You know, we were trying to figure out what to call ourselves, and we're just coming up with names and coming up with names and coming up with names, and it just kind of stuck, and we just kind of liked it. We like, you know, it represents all kinds of different things, you know. I mean,
I think we came up with the name, it was in the winter, and out here in Portland, you know, we had a lot of trees. And when the trees freeze, the branches will fall off, and they can kill you. And so those are called Widowmakers. That's why I think we were thinking of it at the time, and it just sounded hard as fuck, so we went with it.
Yeah, you know, it kind of also sounds like, you know, we'll kill you and leave your wife alone. So we thought that sounded something like this.
Well, because, like, you guys' production, it has a very unique sound. That's what drew me to you guys' music. Because, like, for you guys to get West Side Gun, Sauce Heist, El Divino, and Conway the Machine all on the same track, that's some, like, next-level stuff right there. I'm just wondering, too, have you guys had that in the making for a while, or did that come organically with Trevor Lane?
Well, it's kind of a trip how it all came to be. We bought those verses. I think we linked up with Conway in like early 2016, mm-hmm. January 16, and that's when we started talking to Conway and Westside Gunn both, and we bought some verses from them. You know, back, I mean, this was January 16. I mean, you know, it was very reasonable, and they were working hard, and you know, they gave us a great opportunity there. But anyways, we kind of, you know, I got ill, and after that, we kind of took a little break, and we were just kind of like, everything was on the back burner. And I was talking with Trevor Lang about possibly releasing a cassette, releasing Colossus on cassette, and I guess he was probably digging through our Instagram way back, and saw that we were possibly sitting on some Westside Gunn and Conway verses, and he asked me about them, and then we started talking with Grant and me and Trevor, everybody's talking and just trying to figure out what we want to do, and Trevor had the idea, you know, he's pushing Sauce Ice real hard, and Sauce is, you know, he's tight, so he wanted to see if we put Sauce on there, and I'm an Al Divino fan, I knew Al Divino was selling verses, so we had Trevor hit up Al also, and you know, it just kind of all came together that way. And then the homie DJ Ozrock, he's from Portland here, he's a scratch DJ, and we reached out to him because he's just a homie of ours. He's ill, so he laid down the scratches for us, and that's how the track came to be. It's a 5-year-old track, basically, or a 4-year-old track.
Really? Wow.
I think it comes down, like, it was, like, Gutta is an incredible strategist, and he saw something in Westside and Conway, you know, before, you know, they got picked up, before, you know, they had blown up to where they are now. And we got it, and that was, you know, like, weren't quite sure what we were going to do with it for a long time. And it wasn't until, you know, we started talking to Trevor Lang, and then we brought on these other verses, that the whole thing kind of fell into place, and we knew that it was ready.
Because, like, we'll get into that Colossus project, because that's one of my favorite projects by you guys, and a little bit after. But I'm just curious, too, because I like how you guys said that you guys were on Wes and Conway before they got picked up by Shady, because I noticed that a lot of people are flocking towards them now because of the Shady cosign. But, like me, you, Grant Gutter, I found Wes and Conway through Combat Jack. Are you guys familiar with Combat Jack?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, when Combat, I believe that they were promoting Fly God or something around that time, too. But I'm curious, too, when you guys listen to old podcasts like a Combat Jack and stuff like that, how did you guys find a lot of these underground artists like Westside Gunn?
The first time I heard, the way that I came on to them, I think I'm pretty sure I discovered them first of the two of us, was I was just rolling around with my son, and we were just listening to music, and I think it was Black Tar with Sean Price, the song Black Tar came on, and I heard Westside Gunn start rhyming. I mean, don't get me wrong, Sean Price rhymes are amazing also on that cut and everything else, but I heard Westside Gunn, and my jaw just dropped. I was just like, who the fuck is this? You know, like, this is just giving me that feeling that I used to have, you know? And literally, I mean, I know I hear people say it and shit, but like, I was like, what is this? Who is this? You know, and next thing I knew, you know, maybe 6 months later, we're sitting on a Westside Gunn and a Conway verse.
Now, when you guys have, like, unreleased verses like that, too, do you guys play, like, a lot of your unreleased music from time to time, like, just for yourselves, and just be like, wow, we did this, but we're never going to release it, kind of like a collector's item just for you guys?
I mean, we do constantly, and it's, primarily, I love listening to the music I love listening to any kind of music, and I like what we make a lot, but I think a lot of the times when we listen to stuff, you know, there is that feeling of, you know, this is something that we have that no one's heard yet or that no one's ever going to hear, but, you know, we're always working, and I think the idea that when we we listen to our own music is to try to improve it. So that's, you know, try to rearrange it so that it sounds exactly how we want it to, try to change the mix, try to think about how we want to master it, how we want to release it. I mean, you know, we have CDs or playlists on our phone of, you know, records we've built that we haven't released that maybe five other people have heard that, you know, when we get together, we talk about, okay, like, let's change track four, let's make it shorter, you know, let's change the drums in this. And, we, you know, we're constantly trying to revise what we do so that by the time anyone does hear it, you know, and it can take 4 years. I mean, as we saw with Lammy, by the time anyone does hear it, it's exactly what we intended to put out.
Yeah, and I roll around listening to our music that we're currently producing on a constant because it's not because I want to drive around excuse me, and listen to our own music necessarily. I mean, I love our music, but it's because we're always analyzing our product before we release it, you know, like, you know, we'll make a beat and then we'll get together later on, you know, days later, week later, whatever, and we'll make changes to that beat that we've discovered need to happen by bumping it, you know, 100 times during that week prior, you know what I mean?
And we're the kind of producers that, you know, when we make something, even if something sounds like an accident, nothing is an accident. We, you know, we make sure that everything sounds the way that we want it to, and that comes from just analyzing and, you know, kind of tweaking all of the parameters of every track and making sure that everything sounds exactly how you want it to.
That's why I like interviewing producers, too, because, like, every producer always seems to have, like, an unreleased playlist that they always play for them or their friends, and they're never going to release it or they fix it. And I'm wondering, too, your guys' beats, like, the best way I can describe it, and please don't take offense to this, gents, because I mean this with the most utmost respect. If Lord of the Rings had an underground rap scene, they'd definitely be rapping over Widowmaker beats.
Oh, hell yeah. I'll take that.
But I'm not saying that's with all your beats too, because some of your beats too, like the beat with Kay Burns' Bespoke, that's actually one of my favorite tracks that you guys produce too. You guys always produce in the same room together?
Well, we constantly work on our own, but with the Widowmaker product that you hear, it's typically us in the same room together. All, you know, 95% of it probably.
Yeah, and that might be, you know, we'll have a piece of something. Everything always gets finished together. So, you know, I might work on, you know, I might have a 16 that sounds dope, and that's all I've got. And so then we'll get together and we'll build it into something, you know, and then that's when we kind of add all those little touches in there. So it's not really, truly a Widowmaker beat unless we both had our hands on it. Usually that's the either the entire life of building the track or at least kind of arranging it and finishing it.
Yeah, because when you guys told me that you guys were from Portland, when I listen to tracks like Witching Hour with T. Call, it really does sound like you guys are from the East Coast with your beats. I'm wondering, who are your few your gents influences when it comes to making beats? Because you guys have a very unique sound, and that's what I flock towards too, uniqueness and authenticness.
I probably have some non-traditional influences. I mean, I love Alchemist. I think Rock Marciano makes incredible beats. But I listen to a lot of Portishead, Massive Attack. I started making beats because I heard, you know, when I was 13 years old, I heard DJ Cam, who was a French kind of jazz producer. He made all these beats out of old jazz records. And so, you know, I go back to a lot of those. And there are a million producers that I listen to, and usually if I listen to a rap record, I'm listening for the producer. But, you know, I draw inspiration from a lot of different kinds of music, and I think when you work in sample-based production, you can't help but listen to things that aren't hip-hop and kind of hear how they feed into what you're making.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Muggs. It's been a lot of fun watching him step back into this little subgenre of hip-hop and just kind of, like, take over. That's been an amazing thing to see.
For sure.
You know, keep your eyes on some new cats, too. You know, like Wavy the God, I like him a lot. Rob De Niro, you know what I mean? Like, there's some cats on the underground in the same genre that we're working in that are just crushing it. You know, we like Derringer. All kinds of stuff, man. I mean, I mean, one of my favorite producers is Grant Burgess. This motherfucker right here, I mean, he's got a solo record that's completely finished, and it's not out yet, and we haven't really announced the name or anything yet, but, like, just wait till you hear Grant's solo shit. I mean, it's next level, man.
And this is the closest we've come to an announcement so far.
Yeah. Sorry.
No,
I had to.
No, it's all good.
I appreciate that, gents. I'm just wondering, too, what made Grant want to kind of do like a solo project? Because we'll touch on the Trevor Lane relationship in a minute.
So I was making some things on our off days that didn't quite fit the sound that we were working with. And I wanted to build something that was kind of cohesive from the beginning to the end. And I didn't actually intend to make a record out of it. I mean, I make beats pretty much every day. I'm always working in the studio. I bring my laptop with me, so there, I have a lot of material. And I started making kind of this series of beats, and they all kind of tied together in my mind. And they were really kind of dark, and they sounded a little different than what we had been making. We were working on a record that we're still polishing up right now. And before I knew it, it had kind of turned into a full, complete LP. And then there was just the question of, you know, well, what do we do with it from here? And so, you know, we've been talking. We've got some things in the work to see where it goes.
What about you, Gutter? Would you ever have thoughts about doing something like what Grant's doing, like a solo project?
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm currently working on that, and Grant's is finished. Like I said, that's just amazing. But yeah, look for a lot more work coming from under the Widowmaker umbrella. You know what I mean? From both of us and whoever else we pull in under the umbrella too. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just keep your eyes peeled, because we got some. I mean, we got another Widowmaker record finished.
Yeah.
Grant's record's finished. We've got some really strange physical concepts coming up that we really don't want to announce out loud, but just like. We got some pretty revolutionary things coming up. They're going to kind of catch some attention, I think.
Yeah, there's some big structural ideas that we're working on right now that when they all kind of materialize, it's going to be big.
That's what grabs me a lot to producers and artists is the artwork too. What grabbed me to your guys was actually the cassette for Colossus, because when I seen that tape, I'm like, yo, that looks ill as fuck. Sorry for my cousin. I was like, yeah, man, I'm going to have to check these guys out. Because, like you said, I seen you guys across my radar a few times. But I'm like, these guys are rappers and stuff like that. But when I actually, like, took the time to dive into Widowmaker, I'm like, yo, these guys are production duos. And they're getting, like, these underground rappers over their beats, too. So where I'm going with this, too, the Colossus project with Ayla Toya, if I'm saying it right?
Ayatollah.
I was wondering how that came together, sir. I mean, gents.
I'm going to let Gutta answer that, because he's the one who figured out the album art for Colossus. And we all worked on the art design, but that was his brainchild.
Well, Ed, real quick, I wanted to just confirm something. You said the Colossus cassette, but we actually never dropped that. It got to the point where it was announced. There was actually like a mock-up cassette look for it. But then it got put on the back burner to release the Lammy maxi single on vinyl. So, like, that actually never came out on cassette yet. But just on vinyl. But, I met Ayatollah on the random. Not on the random. We have a mutual friend. And Pete, what's up, Pete, if you're listening? Pete put us on to Ayatollah and said, hey, man, I know this guy that makes beats. You guys make beats. And he wants some help with some recording. And linked us up, and we originally got together to work on some recordings for Tola, but when Tola started hearing, so at this point, Widowmaker was already in existence, you know what I mean? We'd already dropped the Asahi sessions, and then we met with Tola, and he started hearing us, work, you know, just hearing our beats, and he liked what we were doing, so we all put together a record together, and that's how it came about. As far as the art goes, I was just down a rabbit hole one day looking at art online of, like, giants
and, I don't know, goblins and shit. I don't know, just dark art, you know what I mean? And I came across this painting by Pitar Meselja. He's a tremendous painter. I hit him up, really generous guy, you know. I hit him up and asked him permission to use his painting, and we worked something out. And he's a great person, and he was happy to let us use his art for the cover of Colossus.
Yeah, that is one hell of a painting, I tell you that.
He's an amazing painter. He is typically in that fantasy genre, real clean lines and real, you know, like Dungeons and Dragons type paintings. But he has these series of like oil paintings that he does too, and you know, thick textural paintings like the monster face or the giant face on Colossus, you know. And something about it, the second I saw it, I was in love with it. I didn't think there's any way in hell he's going to let us use it, and he was just like, he wanted to listen to the record first. So we sent it to him, and he was like, oh, yeah, this is great. Go ahead, guys, you know. And we worked out a little something, and it worked out great.
Yeah, wildlife beads my joint and the Ken's joint.
I'm sorry, one more time there?
I said the wildlife and the Ken's joint are my favorites.
Nice. Thank you, man. Thank you for listening, man.
Thank you.
Oh, I always got to listen before I interview people, because I just can't be throwing anybody up on my show I don't listen to.
Hey, you're one of the 10 people that have listened to our work. Thank you.
Well, like you said, too, I'm not too sure if you gents are aware. I interviewed somebody like a Buckshot and General Steel. It made me realize that they were big in the underground, like in the 90s, and in this day and age, the underground is thriving, and I mean thriving. I'm curious, too, how did the Trevor Lane relationship come up? Because he recently appeared on the show and mentioned you, James.
Yeah, that was, I actually listened to that show. Good work, by the way. I approached Trevor about doing the Colossus cassette, which never came to fruition. And we were going to do it, and then that's when he, you know, maybe 24 hours later, he was like, hey, man, are you sitting on a Westside Gunn and Conway verse? I think he found some, you know, proof of that somewhere and hit us up about it. And I was like, you know what? We are. It was just kind of on the back burner. I mean, we didn't know what we were going to do with it. We were in no hurry to release it, and we just, you know, it was maybe even not going to release. We were just doing our thing, you know, and
I think one of the big things about Trevor Lang, like, the more you look at how we usually operate, we do almost everything in-house. So our artwork is, you know, like the art design for Colossus was done in-house. The art design for the Asai sessions, it was drawn by a friend of ours, Ronnie. And, you know, we do all of our own mixing. We do all of our own mastering. We're very protective of making sure that what we produce is you know what we want to produce and is something that's of really high quality. And so, kind of working with other people is something that we, you know, that we want to do, that we like to do, but we really want to make sure that the work that they put out is of a certain quality. And Trevor Lang exceeds that quality. Everything he does is just really well done. It's really clean. It sounds great. It looks great. And his distribution method is amazing.
Yeah, I know you're already aware of it, but everyone that's listening to this, keep your eyes on Trevor Lang.
Oh, yeah.
He's got big things coming.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I noticed with you guys' singles, too, like, you guys get a lot of attention with Larry, but I want to focus on the singles like The Witching Hour and Bespoke. With you guys' upcoming projects and future Widowmaker LPs or EPs, do you guys plan to have more artists featured on the actual tapes as opposed to having instrumental tapes?
This is a conversation that we have a lot, and I think the thing is that, you know, like I just said, we're particular with who we work with. We want to work with people who are great, and I think that so far we absolutely have. I think everyone that we've worked with, you know, reflects like a high quality, and we're very interested in working with MCs in the future. We've got a few that. You know, some projects that we've got that we're working on now, and some people that we'd like to work with in the future. But the idea of putting out more instrumental tapes, I think that's absolutely something that we are planning on doing and that we're working on. So yeah, a little bit of both.
I'm curious too, when it comes to artwork like The Witching Hour too, what was the inspiration behind that record, and why did you want to put T. Call on it?
Well, first of all, the artwork, that was all 100% Trevor Lang on that, and he designed the Lamy cover also. I mean, he's all of the artwork and packaging and everything for Lamy. He's an amazing cat with that. But I'm sorry, repeat the question one more time.
Well, it's the real quick. I think the Witching Hour cover was Trevor Lang's kind of interpretation or his take on that track, and it was something that we hadn't thought of. As a matter of fact, we had just gotten done doing the cover art for Bespoke, and we weren't even thinking of cover art for Witching Hour, and all of a sudden he had it done, and it looked beautiful. So that's another instance of, if you work with the right people, you can kind of trust them to do great work, and that's the Witching Hour cover is a good example of that.
That's very cool.
And then T. Cole, I'm sorry about that. As far as T. Cole, he had reached out to us a couple times to maybe do some work, and we were really busy at the time, and we were just kind of like, we get back to everybody that hits us up, you know what I mean? Like, we don't fade anybody. So, we don't get, it's not like we have some giant list of people hitting us up. I mean, it's manageable, you know what I mean? So, we hit up anybody that hits us up, you know, we'll correspond with anybody about anything, really. But, Witching Hour, T had reached out to us to work, and then finally, we had just done the Bespoke single with Kerry K. Burns, and we were like, we wanted to do another single, you know? We're just doing these singles just to keep the name bubbling, you know?
Yeah.
And we're looking for other artists who felt the same way, you know? Like, and Teak was on it, you know? These are just, there's no money involved in these singles. These are just free releases for the heads. And so Teak was down. We hit him up, and we're like, hey, man, you know, let's do a single. And he was down, man, and we sent him a list of beats. He picked that beat, and it just went from there. He got back to us relatively quickly with his verses.
Fast.
He's on the ball, man, and he does great work. Teak's a man of his word and a hard worker.
Yeah, and we work with, we talk to a lot of artists who talk about how they want to work on this project, or they really want to get some done, or they want to put together this, whatever. And, the amount that actually return verses or return whatever they're doing quickly, and like that is recorded well, and like they actually put it together, that's pretty rare. And so when there's someone that's, that's about it enough to actually put in the work, that speaks volumes to us. And so someone like T. Call or K. Burns, that's why those things turn out the way that they do.
Yeah, and the K. Burns track, I mean, that was our first free single, and the idea was just to keep the name bubbling, and same with K. Burns. I mean, we're just coming off of the Lamy release, and K. Burns was just about to drop Pyrex Scholars. You know, we're thinking, we both have releases right now. Let's do a single together. And I hit him up about it, and we'd already been in contact before, and he was down with it, and it all worked out great. Much love to K. Burns, man.
Well, I think I speak for both of us, too, when I say that, we really like doing those singles. It's something that, we produce so much material that eventually we either decide it goes into this project, or we, it kind of goes in the bin of stuff we listen to on our own. When we can work with an artist that we respect and put out a track relatively quickly that we're proud of and that people like to listen to, that, I love doing that.
Does, when you listen to, like, Ito and Vinyl Villain, or like Flea Lord and God Bless Bets Lord Talk Volume 2, did that give you two inspiration on doing like a full EP with one artist? I'm not too sure if you guys are familiar with the names I said.
Oh yeah, we're familiar with all four of those names actually. Yeah, definitely. I mean, we look to the future to having a Widowmaker record. An MC's record produced by Widowmaker,
yeah.
Like a single, we're a duo, but a single producer, single MC type of record, features and all that. But, I mean, look for it to happen for sure. We're very interested in doing that. It's just finding the right person to work with has been a challenge so far.
And we've kind of started, or at least started talks about doing that with a number of different artists. And, for whatever reason, it hasn't materialized yet. But I think there are a few that we've talked to that, when it pans out, it's going to look exactly like that, and it's going to be dope.
Yeah, and what I hope happens eventually is either someone travels here or we travel elsewhere, yeah, and we can build together in the same room, and you know what I mean? Like, that's my goal, and I think Grant's goal, mm-hmm, is, you know, we want to either travel or have someone travel here and put together a piece of art that is, you know, more cohesive than it can be online. That's not to say that there hasn't been great projects done online and with, you know, right, data transfer back and forth without ever meeting each other. You know, I mean, we've never actually met in the flesh, T. Call or K. Burns or anybody that we've worked with, yeah, aside from DJ Ozrock, who's our homie. So, I mean, you know, it can be done. I mean, there's great projects being done, but, you know, you'll be able to feel that shit when we're all in the same room together. And you'll be able to feel, it'll be a special project, you know?
Yeah.
You guys have to have a relationship with the artist before you make a project like that. Because when I interviewed Flea, God Bless, and Ito, shout out to all three good people to the show, I noticed that, they got to have a relationship with the producer, too. And that's how, like, some of the most fire music comes out.
Absolutely. That's one of the challenges that we're running into, you know what I mean? I mean, I live in Gresham, Oregon. Grant lives in Portland, Oregon. And we work in a very specific subgenre of hip-hop, you know? I mean, there's nobody out here doing what working in the same genre that we're working in, really, that rhymes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we don't just have our pick of people that rhyme. Like, you know, if we were on the East, it might be a little bit easier. But, you know, what we've built from this little town on the West Coast, that does not have a giant hip hop scene. I mean, we're pretty proud of it. You know, yeah, we've been working hard. You know, like it's a trip being here in Portland. You know, there's a scene, but it's just not the same type of genre that we work within.
I love how you guys are so in tune with the underground too, because your beats are made for that. I'm curious too. Are you guys aware of Adonis?
Did you say Adonis?
Yes, sir.
I'm not. Are you?
No.
So he works with Vidon too, and I believe that you guys will really enjoy that project by him and Vidon.
All right. Yeah, I've heard a lot of Vidon beats. I'll definitely look that up.
I'm curious too. You guys are all aware of Slaughterhouse, right?
Of course.
So during the making of the Glasshouse album that never got released, there was a super group of producers, like it was A-Rab Music, Just Blaze, Static Selector, Illmind, and they all formed like a super group, like how Slaughterhouse did. I'm wondering, in the future, if you guys meet the right people in the future, would you guys kind of make a super group of producers, like a production, like a four-man production group?
It's funny you should mention this. So, that's what Colossus is. Colossus is Widowmaker and Ayatollah. And Ayatollah, I mean, he's got quite a rap sheet. We've toyed with the idea of working with another producer or another couple of producers. You know, we've got some ideas for how we would, how you actually make something like that, how we would package it or market it. I think that's something. I mean, producing is something that, you know, most people do by themselves, and we've learned how to work together and to create something that neither of us could make on our own. So it can be difficult, and I would imagine it would be difficult, you know, to work with two or three other producers, you know, or you know, whatever it may be. But I think that, you know, depending on how you put it together and how, you know, how carefully you were to make it sound right, I think that could be something. I mean, we've definitely talked about it, so I think we'd definitely be down.
Okay, yeah, because I was always curious that about Widowmaker, too, because you guys are a production duo, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are a duo, yeah, and, you know, Widowmaker is a sound that neither of us are really capable of making on our own, you know what I mean? When you hear Grant's solo project relatively soon, you'll be blown away, but it doesn't sound like Widowmaker.
Right.
When you hear my stuff, it doesn't sound like Widowmaker either. I'm on that really grimy, slow, you know, loop-based, you know, type of shit, and Grant's just a musical genius. So I mean, when we come together and make Widowmaker, it's a sound that we can't make on our own. You know, and the fact that you call it a unique sound, we really appreciate that, yeah, because working in a sample based genre, getting your own sound out of sampling is a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
So and we really appreciate that you said that our sound is unique, because, you know, chopping beats, it's hard. It's, you know, you gotta it's hard to come up with your own sound, you know?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, we both come from similar backgrounds, similar tastes in music, but, you know, I think we have totally different approaches to how we make music, you know? I mean, like, Dada has always been much better with hardware and, you know, kind of much more plugged into that, that, you know, like you said, grimy, kind of like gritty DIY sound. And I've been a music producer for a lot of different things. Like, you know, I do commercials, and I do music for videos. I mean, like I write all sorts of different kinds of music, and so I have a kind of a more like music production scoring background. And so, you know, like I said, the two of us still we don't necessarily sound the same, but when we come together, it's something different. I mean, I'll go. I did some music this last year for a Christian Dior ad, a proof of concept ad for Audi. I've made all sorts of, and those sound nothing like Widowmaker. So when I bring kind of those skills in to Widowmaker, and when Gutta brings his skills into it, it's the synergy. It's absolutely unique.
Yeah, we'll have a video for that Dior ad soon enough, and you'll be able to hear what we're talking about. I mean, it's like a whole other sound, but that's Grant. I mean, Grant can do anything. So I mean, Dior wants an ad, call Grant. You know,
another ad.
I'm wondering too, do you guys keep a lot of your physical releases like on a wall or like around the house just as a reminder? It's like, yeah, like we did this, like just as a reminder.
We do. We have the dub plates, we have the metal, you know, and we keep some test presses and some, you know, we did a record out here, and we did some like real experimental presses because the press that we use to make the records is here in Portland, and so, you know, we would go down and be like, let's try this out, and if it didn't work out, we still got to hold on to them. So
yeah, that was a crazy release. That's a release called Widowmaker X Oregon's Finest. You know, Widowmaker versus Oregon's Finest, and Oregon's Finest is a pot dispensary, you know, a weed dispensary here in Portland, and
there's a lot of those.
Yeah, they commissioned us to make a record for them, for them to sell as merch in their shop. And so we started experimenting with Cascade Record Pressing about pressing actual, like, weed leaves into the vinyl, you know?
So
Gutta calls me over, and I was living two blocks from his house at the time, and I come over, and he's got this clear record, and the actual bands are on the outside, so the record runs out, so there's space in the middle, and there's this pot leaf right in the middle of the record, and it didn't work out. The way that it messed with the vinyl, you couldn't, the sound quality wasn't good enough. But we've got a couple copies of,
yeah, we got like 6 or 7 copies probably of that out near the pad, just with the leaves pressed into them. But it did affect the fidelity of the record, yeah. So we opted to just go with this clear with black and white splatter.
Which is dope.
It's a dope product. You see it on our Instagram page. There's a picture of the record up towards the top.
Wow, that's very unique, and, like, I don't think anyone ever done that before.
Yeah, there's been people who experiment with pressing leaves into records, but typically they only play on the other side, and the leaves press into the side that doesn't play.
Yeah, I can see why they don't do it.
Yeah, it sounds like shit. But yeah, they typically make a non-playing side, and that side the leaves go on, but we had an LP, so it wasn't an option, you know?
But we've been going to this record pressing plant since, you know, pretty much since they first opened, so we know them pretty well, and, you know, asking them to try this out was, you know, it's just a 20-30 minute drive down there, so it wasn't that difficult.
Yeah, shout out Cascade Record Pressing. Yeah. They worked with us, they experimented for us, they're all about the customer, man.
I'm telling you, have y'all gents been to Canada?
Never. I went to Canada when I was a teenager, that's it, so.
Oh, you guys gotta come here now, we have legal weed out here.
Nice, same here in Oregon, yeah. It's just like, I go to the store and buy a herb and get a receipt,
yeah.
Does that blow your mind still?
It does. I did not think we'd see in our lifetime.
I mean, there's more dispensaries than Starbucks out here, and it's the Northwest. It's crazy.
Did you know down here there's a little weed selection in a co-op?
A co-op, you said?
Yeah, so there's like a little weed selection, like a bakery, but it's a little pot store down there.
Oh, that's cool.
It kind of makes me think, like, the people that are, like, you know, like, the people who were so against it, and now they're buying it, like, oh, I smoke weed. It's like, dude, You were so against this, like 4 years ago before it was legal. Does that still blow your mind? Like, how, like, some, like, did you guys know somebody who, like, you don't know personally that was against weed, and then all of a sudden they're smoking it since it's legal?
Well, I think it came from just a ton of misinformation. I mean, I don't know about Canada, but in America, we went through DARE. So, from, like, fourth, fifth grade on, like, we got told all the time that drugs are bad and marijuana is, it's the gateway drug. It's the devil's lettuce. It's the devil's lettuce.
Yeah.
And so I think there were a lot of people that thought it was awful. And after a while, it just became too hard to deny that it was no worse, if not a little bit better than alcohol. And once it became legal and you could look at the ingredients and you could see how strong it was, and, you know, people you know that are 60, people you know that are 21 are going out and buying it, it really quickly, the stigma just fell away.
Yeah, any stigma that's left over is just some Reagan-era bullshit, yeah. You know, bored Nancy Reagan with billions of dollars to waste on trying to tell kids to not smoke pot, you know what I mean? It was all bullshit, and I think people are finally starting to see through it. I mean, I've always seen through it. Grant's always seen through it, I'm sure, but the masses are starting to see, oh, our parents were lied to, you know, so what we grew up hearing was a lie, but our parents just thought they were doing the right thing, maybe. Because they just didn't know any better, you know what I mean? I don't know. It seems to me there's a lot more critical thinking going on in this era. I'm sure I'm wrong about that, but
and I'm gonna say this for the people, because weed, that's all you should do. And if for all those people who need something, who always say, oh, I need something stronger than weed, I'm going to tell you this. Why don't you pack that weed into a bong? You won't think of anything hard after that.
Yeah, just get stronger weed.
Yeah, just eat some edibles, man. Eat some edibles and hover on it.
Okay, so I'll share a story with you. I don't think I shared this on the podcast on why I will never do edibles before. You guys are aware of edible chocolates, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, one time, my friend gave me a whole bag. You know, I ate a handful. 2 hours later, nothing happened. I'm like, man, this is why I don't fuck with edibles. So I'm like, I'm going to just eat the whole bag. And this bag was like the size of a little chip bag. So about like 4 hours later, I realized I done fucked up. I thought I was going to be the first person to fucking OD off of edibles because, like, he came back and he's like, what's wrong? I'm like, oh, I ate the chocolates. He's like, which one, two or three, you pussy? I'm like, I ate the whole bag. And he's like, what do you mean you ate the whole bag?
Oh, man. I've been there. I mean, I've seen it. I've seen a girl call an ambulance on herself before because of edibles. You know what I mean?
a friend of ours ate a decent amount of edibles and was convinced for like 3 hours that she could tell the future.
And I'm curious too. Are you guys prefer some edibles or like a nice rolled joint?
I definitely prefer a joint, but weed makes me freak out, so I barely ever have any.
Yeah, I like the puff. You know, anything from a blunt to a joint to a bowl, it's whatever for me. I do love herb though. I don't drink. You know, I don't really mess with any drugs or alcohol. I don't smoke cigarettes. But I love my herb.
Yeah, because I was curious on, like, because I know some producers, they smoke herb to get inspired, too. And I was just curious if you guys did, too. But Grant said he barely does it. So I can only imagine Grant in the studio getting blunted.
Yeah, well, instead you can imagine Grant in the studio with me getting...
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
And be like, what's wrong with this guy?
Yeah, I'm drinking coffee, and he's the one getting blunted.
You know,
I wish.
I like how you said drinking coffee, because I don't drink or do hard drugs either, and every time I go out to the club, I always ask for coffee or a latte, and the people's like, yo, what the hell's wrong with you? I'm like, I'll drink.
I'll bet you about 3 hours later, they're all walking around looking foolish, and you're standing there looking normal, though, right?
Yeah, and I'm over here, I'm networking, and they're like, oh, I can be not macking on women. I'm like, I'm trying to do this podcast, and that's a lot of people don't realize, too. Like, you got to sacrifice a lot of your personal life if you want to make it in life.
Yeah, if you want to make anything of any real value, like, there's a lot of discipline you have to have with yourself.
Yeah, I looked through your entire site of all your podcasts. I didn't listen to them all yet. I will, actually, but I've listened to about five or six of them, and I really enjoyed them, and I can really really see that you put in a lot of work, man. I mean, you got to consider that an hour on the phone with every one of those people is probably a lot more work than that hour. And, yeah. I mean, I can tell you're putting in a lot of work, man.
And just insightful questions, too.
Oh, I appreciate that, gents. I get that all the time, but for you guys to say you actually listen, oh, I appreciate that. It means a lot.
Oh, definitely. I listen to the God Bless Beats. I listen to Daniel's song. I listen to the Mob to Plea. I listen to a couple others. Yeah, and I really enjoyed them.
Oh, I'm glad you guys did too. I'm glad that I can add a Widowmaker to my podcast because, like you said, I believe the producers are finally getting their shine now because the producers deserve as much credit as the artists because they're the ones they're the ones making the beat that you're bobbing your head to.
Well, and that's been the thing that I've been listening to for 20, 30 years is these producers and like. To see, different eras change and the technology changes and the sound changes. It's something that we really respect and, the process and just the process of digging through samples to find something that sounds the way you want it to is something that we respect a lot. So it's really nice in those eras when producers start to get recognized and they start to kind of push their craft further.
So, I like to throw out a little random question here and there, too. Favorite Super Nintendo game?
Favorite Super Nintendo game? It's got to be Link to the Past. I'm a huge Legend of Zelda fan, and Link to the Past is one of my favorite Zelda games. I also love Earthbound. Earthbound is incredible.
Oh, yeah, I knew you guys were real ones. Most people don't know Earthbound. I love Earthbound.
Earthbound is crazy. Now, I waited until, 2 or 3 years ago to play Earthbound, because I'd heard about it, but I was like, it looks like it's for kids. And it's dark. It's, funny, and it's dark, and it's weird. Earthbound is great.
And I like how they add, real currency, too. Instead of yen, it's actually called money.
Yeah. Well, and so there's a lot of sampling in Earthbound. They actually took a lot of recordings from popular songs and slowed them down and, fucked them up and made them all weird, and the music from it alone is incredible.
And as for you, Gutter?
Oh, man, when it comes to Super Nintendo stuff, I just remember kicking back with my boys playing, Mario Brothers and things like that. I'm a big fan of Tetris. I don't think that's exclusively a Super Nintendo game, but I remember playing it on Super Nintendo.
You played Tetris Attack, though.
Yeah, Tetris Attack.
That was, when we first met, Tetris Attack was all of our homies played it. That game is...
Yeah, we had some serious battles on Tetris Attack.
That's one of the best games. What's your favorite game?
Metroid. Super Metroid.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
But, most people don't know it. They're like, Super Metroid? I'm like, I bet you know Samus, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was too hard for me when I was a kid. I'm still not a very good video game player, and Super Metroid was definitely too hard for me.
You'd be surprised on, how far I got as a kid, and then I went back and played that as an adult. I'm like... What the hell was I doing? But the reason why I asked that question is, too, it's kind of funny how you said Earthbound has a bunch of crazy samples, too. Have you gents ever considered, sampling, a Zelda or, a Tetris Attack?
So we sampled from any source possible. And it's, we were talking about this not too long ago. Just kind of running down the list of where we have pulled samples from, and it's anything you can name, we've probably done it. I sampled from, as I was just messing around, I was really bored, I sampled from Legend of Zelda Minish Cap, which is, I think was on Game Boy Advance or something.
Yes, sir.
I think nothing that we've released was sampled from a video game. Oh, wait, one thing was, but it's a total secret, so we can't tell anyone.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't want you guys to either.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. There's one that we snuck in, but,
did we release that yet?
I think we did.
What was it?
I'm not gonna say.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway, please don't say it on the air.
No, but we've sampled, I first started sampling from, CD in the 90s, and, it's been DVDs, Gutter's got a huge VHS collection, records, tapes, reel-to-reel, anything.
Yeah, VHS is definitely my little secret. I mean, no secret. Plenty of people do it, but I obsess on VHS. And that's one of my preferred sample sources. But I mean, you know, we'll sample anything. I mean, if I find a reel-to-reel tape and it's got something on it, I'm sampling it. You know, I mean, it's just all about digging and being creative with how you dig, you know?
Well, we have a lot of audio engineering skills, too. So a lot of, a decent amount of what we do is we record our own sounds and then, you know, we'll work them in so that they fit the kind of fidelity of the rest of the track. So there's, you know, they're pretty hard to pick out, at least if we're doing our job right. But there's, you know, there are a lot of, we'll sample from stuff that's in the room. That happens fairly often.
I like how you said Gutter has a huge VHS collection, too. With cassettes making a big comeback in the future, in this day and age, would you gents think that a collectible VHS, like featuring music videos, whatever, like make its wave, like how the cassettes are making their comeback wave, should I say?
You know, I don't think it will, simply because of the it's not the format, it's the player. I mean, there's a million VHS tapes out there, but I mean, I got a ton of VCRs, but I mean, how many does my neighbor have? You know what I mean? Like,
somebody says you might have to sell them to VCR.
Well, and I think as a novelty, someone will and probably has released a VHS, but, you know, I don't think that VHS would see the renaissance that vinyl did, you know, or even that cassette tape. And video is different, too. You know, people want a certain amount of, like, resolution on what they're doing, and if they want to do a throwback thing, they usually go to film. So, you know, it's definitely possible, and I don't want us to be the people that are on record saying there's no way anyone's ever going to care about VHS, but I think that'd be a lot harder than, like, vinyl coming back or cassette tapes.
I'm curious, too. It sounds like you gents, like, watch a lot of movies. I'm curious on a couple of your favorite films.
My absolute favorite film, it's not a real popular one, I usually get shit for it, but my favorite film is Blair Witch Project. I love, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is one of my favorites. I like Fistful of Dollars, so anything out of that spaghetti western time. I really like, what was I recently watching? Oh, shit, what is my favorite movie? There's like a third one that's always in the room.
Yeah. I like all kinds of film. I can't even put a name on it, you know? It's all kinds of things for me.
Yeah, I love horror movies too, so like I love The Shining, I love The Exorcist, even Stanley Kubrick too.
I like how you said the Blair Witch Project too. It kind of fits in with you guys' sound too.
It's Blair Witch Project it's just so weird and so unique, and you know, as somebody who makes music by editing things together and like trying to piece together an idea, I love editing. I love film editing, I love audio editing, and like the fact that they were able to make a film like that and market it the way they did, which I think that's the incredible part, is that it was the first film that was like fully marketed on the internet, and they told everybody in the world that it was real for months, maybe for a year, they said this is real, and it, like, no one had done anything like that. No one had ever, like, just straight up lied in advertising like they did.
Straight, years later, you find out it's fake as fuck.
Oh, it's fake as fuck, and like, and those people that are in the film went on late night talk shows shortly after the film dropped, and people still thought it was real.
And I remember seeing that as a kid. I was like, Jesus Christ, that's real? And then years later, I'm like, those motherfuckers.
Yeah, totally. And speaking of, back on that VHS tip, too, just to give you guys one of our little secret insights to production, don't ever sleep on blank VHS tapes being a recording platform for you to record samples into, because analog peaks out differently than digital. So you can run that shit super hot, peek it out on the tape and get a different sound, then bring it back into your system off the VHS tape and get a different sound than you could have achieved simply through tweaking effects and messing with effects, you know?
Yeah.
That's one of Widowmaker things. There's a lot of analog going on, you know what I mean?
A VHS tape is the video side of it's digital, but the audio is analog, and so you can get great tape distortion out of that.
I'm curious, too, did you guys find that little trick in the 90s?
I mean, I wasn't. Or did we find that trick in the 90s? I mean, no, it wasn't in the 90s. I wasn't even making beats really until like 99, 2000 or so.
I was doing shit on Fruity Loops back then.
Yeah,
so I was doing anything cool.
Yeah, I was
that
just,
time.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because
yeah, these are little tricks we've learned through the years of just experimentation, you know?
Yeah.
I really hope this other podcast reaches out to you because it's a other podcast. Well, I was trying to do some research on you. Have you guys done interviews before?
A few.
Yeah, a few
on the radio station out here. We've done some interviews that ended up in text. So, you know, some articles have been written about us. But I don't think we've done any podcasts before this.
Yeah, I mean, we did an interview on this radio show called The Movement out here on KBOO 90.7 FM. Sunday nights from like 9 or 10 to midnight. It's an all hip hop, all vinyl DJ show.
It's pretty dope.
And our homie Ozrock, who's the dude who laid the scratches on Lammy's part of that crew, the On One Posse, which is the crew that runs The Movement. And those are some of the greatest DJs from the Portland area.
Yeah.
Because
we did an interview though on that. It wasn't as in depth as this.
Yeah.
Oh wow, I appreciate that, Jets.
Wow. So do we.
For the other podcast, if they're listening too, because this other podcast I'm talking about, I won't plug it, but I'll tell you guys off the air. It's a podcast dedicated solely to producers and interviewing producers. That's why I was kind of shocked that he didn't have you guys, because he has a lot of underground producers. So I was like, so where's the Widowmaker interview, yo?
Sorry, what was that you cut out?
Oh, so this podcast that I found, I won't say it too, but I'll tell you guys off the air. It's a podcast dedicated to producers, and they interviewed a lot of underground producers like yourself. So when I was looking through it, I was kind of tight because I was like, yo, where's the Widowmaker interview, yo?
It's tough. So again, being out in Portland, you know, we don't run into anybody in real life. And so we would love to do more interviews, you know, and we like to work and we like to have conversations about, just like this one that we're having now. But yeah, where is the Widowmaker podcast?
Yeah, no doubt. Where is it? That's the kind of stuff that we're definitely interested in doing, you know, like, we love talking production, you know what I mean? I mean, this is, we eat, breathe and sleep this shit. I mean, this is like our lives, you know, I mean, our family and our music, this is it, you know?
But for some reason, I think we also kind of secretly like being slept on, because we, you know, we stand by the stuff that we make, and, you know, everything we put out, I think we're really proud of, and, you know, so we, like, there's something kind of cool when someone finds us, like you did, you know, and wants to talk to us.
Yeah, because I found you guys organically, too. It wasn't like how you guys were in my DMs, like, yo, check this out.
Right.
Yeah, we appreciate that, man. Every little milestone means a lot to us, and this is definitely one of them.
Yeah,
man,
for sure.
Well, I appreciate that, gents, too. I won't take up much of your gents' time because I understand you guys have families and individual lives. As you guys know, this is the last question I ask all my guests, too, and I believe that you guys will give a very good answer. Do you guys have any words for somebody in a dark place trying to see the light?
One of the things that was told to me when I was young that I've kept with me, it's a simple thing, but it's something that that kind of got me through a lot of hard times, was that it's not forever, you know. So if it's a bad day, or if it's a bad year, or, you know, something difficult happened, or, you know, if you're just in a dark place, like you said, I think it's important to remember that it's not forever. You just gotta breathe through it and remember when it wasn't like this, and look forward to when it's not gonna be like this. And then after that, it's just time.
Yeah, and I well said, man. I'd have to say just embrace that shit, man.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, it all happens to everybody, you know. And when it happens, embrace it. Soak the power out of it and keep it with you forever, man. You know what I mean? It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen again. You know what I mean? But, I mean, not on some cheesy ass, what doesn't kill you make you stronger stuff, but, like, A little bit, though. Yeah, like, embrace it, you know? Walk away from it more powerful than you walk into it.
Well, I think, you know, you just said, like, it happens to everybody. I think remembering that you're not alone. When those things happen, they've happened to other people, and other people got through. So, yeah, I think that's a good point, for sure.
One of the reasons why I asked that question to all my guests, too, is because everybody who I asked that question to, including you, Jens, too, gave a different and very unique answer. Like, not one person said the same thing.
Wow, that's right on. That's good, man.
Do you guys have any last words? Would you, Jens, like to plug anything in before I let you two go? I really do appreciate you two, Jens, doing this, too, and I'm mostly excited to see what you guys have in store for the future.
Oh, man, it's an honor to be sitting at the desk alone, homie. Thank you.
Definitely.
You want to plug anything?
I mean,
find our Instagram. That's how we conduct most of our business these days. That's Widowmaker_Beats.
Yeah, but you can find us on Spotify, Instagram. Check out Lammy. Check out our releases. And just keep your ear to the ground, because we got a lot of stuff coming out.
Yeah, keep your eyes peeled for that Grant Burgess solo project coming up. And another Widowmaker project coming up. Yep. And shit, things following that almost immediately.
Yeah.
And you never know what could happen in the future either.
No doubt. This genre's next, man. Yep. You know what I mean? I view this as a subgenre. I know we asked your last question. I'm sorry to keep you going, but...
Oh, no, you guys can keep going. No worries.
Yeah, one of the things that bothers me about hip-hop is, like, you know, look at metal, for example. There's so many different genres of metal, but hip-hop's just labeled as hip-hop. You know what I mean? And I view this as a subgenre of hip-hop. You know what I mean? This, like... kind of like fly shit, new golden era shit, like, and I think it's gonna be big, you know what I mean? So keep your eyes peeled on Trevor Lang, keep your eyes peeled on Widowmaker. When this shit does get big and it drops huge and everybody's listening to it, we're gonna be sitting on 1,000 beats and ready to roll. So
it's good to hear that you guys have an arsenal ready to go.
Oh, of course
we do, and we have the infrastructure to work with an MC, to edit everything up, to mix it, to master it, to do the album art. Like, we're ready for this.
Because the social media age, like, it's crazy how fast things can happen.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Things are good. That's the thing, is everyone's trying to navigate this new way of making connections and finding a listenership, you know what I mean? And it's tough. And it's really hard. And that's one of the things we're doing. And just like everyone else, we're just trying to navigate this new era of communication. Because we don't know how to do it either, you know what I mean? And that might be one of the reasons, for example, like that podcast you mentioned, maybe hasn't even heard our names, you know? It's because we got to get them to hear our names, and that's really not what we do, you know? So, luckily, Trevor Lang's been helping us out with that, and he's been pushing us forward quite a bit, and, you know, what Trevor Lang's done for us has been priceless so far.
Well, and Gutta is not taking the credit for how much of that navigating he's done, how much of the marketing and the networking and just, you know, talking to people and like, he's the person you talk to when you want to do this podcast interview. So, you know, if there's any advice for anyone out there, it's, you know, be able to do what you do well, but also have someone who knows how to navigate that world.
Most definitely. I think that's a perfect way to end another classic. I know I say classic a lot, but I really do be dropping classics, because this was a very good interview. All right.
That you do, man. Thank you. Yeah, man. It was an honor, though. Thank you.
Well, thank you, gents, too. And from Desk of Low, featuring Widowmaker.